Hello and welcome to the special edition of the Multimedia Men podcast, WWE style. I'm Brian Kluger from Dallas, Texas. I'm with Tom Nix from Oklahoma. Say hi. You say hi? What is he doing?
I said what up. I'm sorry. Did I already ruin the podcast?
No, not at all. You're making it so good. Mike Pertil from Los Angeles. Say hi.
Hey.
And Angie Sanders from Arlington, Texas. Say hi.
What up, Buttercups?
What's up? And we are going to talk about so much about the WWE tonight. I guess it's been about a month or so since we last had our podcast on the WWE Universe, and so much has happened. We lost a great wrestler, the Ultimate Warrior, recently. We had WrestleMania 30, and we had Raw, which was pretty crazy and entered a new era. We're going to discuss that tonight. We're going to start out with sort of what happened recently with the Ultimate Warrior passing away. And it's just really eerie how it happened, considering he died the day after he appeared on Raw. And
basically predicted his own death.
Yes.
He wasn't the kind of character who could really, you know, bring you in with classic wrestling, but he was so magnetic in what he did that he was, you know, he was, for a 7-year-old kid, he was the best guy.
Now, do you think that he knew about what was to come, you know, following Monday? Because a lot of people
it makes for a great story. But I also think that, you know, if anybody was going to talk about his spirit living forever in the heart of warriors, it would be the Warrior, right? I mean, he was prone to some grandiosity, so I don't think that he was predicting his own death by any means. Although, when you go back and watch both the Hall of Fame speech and the speech from Monday on Raw, he doesn't seem well. I mean, with the benefit of hindsight, you can kind of apply meaning to everything. But I thought that as he was shaking the ropes and as he was walking back, and
he looked tired.
He looked very tired in a way that a guy who was in the kind of shape he was in shouldn't have looked.
Yeah, I mean, he blew up faster than Kevin Nash doing anything. like him shaking the ropes, I mean, he could barely even shake them. It was kind of just like holding on to them and sort of squatting a little bit. And, I mean, you know, it got the point across. But, yeah, I mean, he looked beat red. He looked like he was out of breath. He looked like just doing normal, everyday human being things, like walking from one part to another part and moving around a little bit and speaking words, was really taking a lot out of him. I can't say it was a surprise it was a surprise when you hear the next day that someone's no longer there when you just saw them the night before. But like Mike said, when you put the pieces together and, you know, watching him at the Hall of Fame and how tired he looked and how exhausted doing basic things made him, and then coming out on Raw and barely being able to do even a small fraction of what he used to do in his prime and just looking completely terrible for it, it wasn't that hard to kind of think, like, hey, this guy might not be with us much longer unless he, you know, is just kind of feeling bad these last couple of days or until he gets something checked out with him, because he's obviously not doing well.
Do you, have you been reading anything about, a lot of people have been talking about what a jerk he was backstage and to the WWE over the years? What do y'all think about that?
I honestly, I don't know much about the Warrior. He was before my time, but I do remember that, I mean, he's just energetic, but I have no really idea about the backstage stuff, because everything that I've read so far was how when they have met him, he was not a jerk, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I think there was so much, I'm sure that there's a lot of truth in a lot of the criticisms of him, and certainly his out of character, which I guess would be his real opinions on things, are pretty dark, and he was not a pleasant person or by any means a progressive person outside of the ring.
Yeah, didn't he was a conservative speaker that spoke out against homosexuals and gays, right? Or, same thing.
Yes. And he was prone to, you know, he was prone to say some ridiculous things, but you know, I'm sure that there's some truth in it. And then I'm also of the opinion that the right answer is probably somewhere in the middle, in that he was one of the few people who, when he got into a disagreement with Vince McMahon, instead of caving, he walked.
Yeah.
And he walked 3 different times, and I'm sure that, you know, much like other public walkouts, there's fault on both sides. And when he wouldn't talk to the WWE through the early 2000s, they got to tell their story, and they did. And so, you know, I'm sure that on some days and to some people, he was a jerk. But I think the loss that I'm feeling is of the guy behind the character.
Yeah, the guy behind the character. It is very sad, and it's even, you know, more upsetting that it was reported that he just signed a 3-year deal with WWE. Tom, what do you think that his character was going to be? Do you think he was going to be like a general manager or a ambassador? What do you think?
I don't think they were ever planning on using him in any capacity on television, simply because I think even if he was getting better, he was still prone to, you know, insane outbursts and insane rambling. I mean, we watched his Hall of Fame performance and even his Raw performance, which obviously was probably a little bit scripted, was still just him saying weird, random things, which is what he was known for.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think what he was signed to do was going to be more of like a company representative at events. You know, he would show up, he might do some, maybe do some radio interviews, he would probably hang out backstage, be kind of like an agent or something like that, or he would show up to signings that were sponsored by the company and that kind of stuff. I don't believe they ever had any intention of making him a regular on-air performer, although I can definitely see them, you know, trotting him out, you know, for backstage segments now and again or something like that. But I would be surprised that even if he signed that deal, that he would be on TV more than 2 or 3 times a year. I think he would have been like one of the guys that they may have wheeled up to the pre-show stuff for 5 or 6 minutes and had him talk with, you know, Shawn Michaels and whatnot about a match or something like that. I don't think he would have ever made it on regular Raw or SmackDown television, especially with the fact that, oddly enough, the WWE is really normally pretty good about the welfare and health of their talent, and I'm actually kind of amazed that they didn't do any kind of health screening for him before the Hall of Fame or before he appeared on Raw or anything like that, because I feel like if they had done even a basic, you know, scan or blood pressure assessment or anything like that, they would have found something monumentally wrong with him and possibly could have at least got him fixed up, even though, yeah, you know, he may have missed the Hall of Fame ceremony or may have missed WrestleMania. But I feel like if they had done any kind of serious health screening of him for him being a future performer or even under Legends contract, they would have realized that something internally was just not right at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was clearly. What would you have to say, Angie?
I was going to say, I mean, has the cause of death actually come out yet? Because we don't know if it was something that was longstanding or if it was, I don't know, a brain aneurysm.
I think the only thing that they said, what he was, somebody saw him clutching his chest while he was walking, and that was it. And he was pronounced dead on arrival at the...
Right. I mean, yeah, I read that. But at the same time, what Tom was saying, if he was just going to be on TV for that moment and they didn't expect him to do anything much more physical than walk out and walk back, why would they have done a medical screening on him?
Sure.
Yeah. I feel like if you're gonna sign a contract with WWE, before you sign it, you got to get checked out. That's how I would imagine I think it works, but I guess not.
You'd think that, but, you know, maybe in this case they just, like, okay, we're not going to do anything with him. Or, you know, it's still, you know, just conjecture of whether they would have found something to begin with.
Yeah. Well,
but I mean, I think just seeing him at the Hall of Fame and seeing him doing the stuff or being how he was, you would imagine the Triple H or Vince McMahon or Linda McMahon would be like, you know, hey, are you okay? We'll give you a quick free screening just to make sure that you're feeling all right, because we've got doctors and all this kind of stuff that can, you know, check stuff out for you. Because, I mean, it's not like he was looking, you know, fine and dandy at either event. I mean, he looked like he was struggling to do normal stuff. And like I said, I mean, you're right. Like, there was no reason to do a full physical on him because he had no intention of getting physical in the ring, and he was never going to, you know, do a warrior splash or kick anybody. He was just going to come out and talk. But even coming out and talking seemed like a stress on his body, which you would think.
Well, no, I agree. He looked.
The doctors would kind of be like, hey, you know, this might not be anything, but maybe we should give you at least a little bit of a checkup because you're not looking too good.
Yeah. You know, no, I agree. He looked old. I mean, he looked like an old man shaking the ropes. I completely agree. But, you know, in that respect, but, you know, I mean, I just don't see why they would have. You know, I mean, especially that's even getting him to agree to it, because he could have been a stubborn old man and said, no, I'm fine. Screw your doctors.
Yeah, he could have.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. We don't know. All we know is we miss him. He was great, and we will watch his matches through our time here on the WWE Network, which is awesome, by the way. If you do not have a WWE Network, I highly suggest you, our audience, our one listener, buy it if you don't have it already.
I highly recommend it. I have it daily.
Excellent. And then it is pretty awesome, but we'll move on, and we're going to talk about WrestleMania 30, which is insane. So much stuff happened. Too many crazy things happened. We had Daniel Bryan, one of the audience favorites, win the title. We had Undertaker losing the streak, and we had Cesaro winning the first Andre the Giant Battle Royale, and we have to talk about it. We got to talk about Undertaker Brock Lesnar. Undertaker has won 21 WrestleManias in a row. The highest streak, the biggest streak ever. Nobody thought that he would lose. We thought it was in his contract that he would win everything. And there's two things. One, some people think that Undertaker picked Brock to beat him and pass the torch. Other people think that Undertaker was seriously injured in the ring and had a concussion and had no choice but to, you know, give up the streak. What do you guys think?
Well, I think the second one, you can toss out the window that, like, they changed course midstream. That 21-1 graphic went up real quick, and I can't fathom that the Undertaker would just call an audible in the middle of the match.
Yeah, I really don't think Undertaker would have said, okay, nah, let him have it in the middle of the match. I think that he did choose to lose to Brock Lesnar and pass the torch to the new generation. Because love him, hate him, Brock is good in the ring. He sucks on the mic, but he's good in the ring.
What are you talking about? He sucks in the mic. He had some of the best promo moments of this year I've seen.
That's nonsense. Okay, just the fact that he hasn't hit puberty yet. I cannot stand Brock Lesnar on the microphone. It's like, oh my god, let your balls drop already.
Yeah, but he has Paul Heyman to speak for him, and Paul Heyman is the best mic guy ever.
Paul Heyman is pretty good on the mic. He makes people hate him. I love him.
I do have a slight contention with the idea that Taker is passing the torch to the next generation, because I don't really see Brock Lesnar as the next generation. He came in around the same time as Cena and Batista, and all of those guys are, you know, either one of them is in their mid-40s, the other two are in their mid-30s, and aren't exactly new talent by any means. But he's been gone for a while. But I think the reason that the streak was lost to to Lesnar was because he is probably the only talent on the roster, that could take that victory and run with it and not be almost ruined or tainted by it. Because if, like, if Cena got that victory, he'd be the biggest heel of all time.
Well,
no one would never cheer him ever again.
Well, people...
People don't cheer him anyway, let's be honest.
Well, that's true, but, like, even kids wouldn't cheer for him anymore. Because you saw the kids crying when Brock Lesnar beat him. If Cena beat the Undertaker, they'd still be crying. Because it's because Taker's not supposed to lose, ever.
Yeah.
And because he is part-time, he could take the heat from being the streak beater. He can go away and act like it doesn't matter to him because he's kind of a dick in real life and it doesn't matter to him. Where anyone else who's on TV week after week after week after week, like let's say they gave it to Bray Wyatt next year and he was the one that broke the streak as a character building moment, there's a very real possibility that that character would have never, ever, ever been able to overcome the fact that he beat the streak, and people might always boo him or they might only associate him with that for the rest of his career, and he's got too much of a future ahead of him to rest his laurels on that one thing. So give it to the guy who's always going to be a heel in real life and in the ring. Give it to a guy who's just going to vanish for 6 months at a time. So no one, so everyone has to pay attention to the other heels that are still around and build heat on them and not just let Brock Lesnar take it as long as he needs to. If there was anybody that was going to do it, he's in the perfect spot. And from a booking perspective in kayfabe world, there wasn't a single person who believed that a 50-year-old man who looks like a 55 or 60-year-old man could have legitimately beat someone who looks and is the strength and the power of Brock Lesnar in a real quote-unquote fight.
Exactly.
Obviously, we all know it's not real, it's scripted, you know, there's already a winner in place, but to create that illusion, like, you could say, sure, I can see how Taker could beat CM Punk, I can see how Taker could beat Triple H, I can see how Triple H, and all that kind of stuff makes sense, but at the age he's at, with the power and the pedigree that Brock Lesnar is, no one really, in the real world, thought that that Taker could have beaten someone like that. They would have been like, well, they're just going to let him win because he always wins, and maybe Brock Lesnar will get cocky and he'll catch him in, like, the Hell's Gate or something like that. But no, they followed through with the kayfabe storyline, which is a 50-year-old man went into the ring with a man-beast and got destroyed by him.
But let's talk about that match. I really enjoyed that match. I thought both Undertaker and Brock really sold everything and really powered through that whole match.
I thought one of the coolest things about the match is that there wasn't a pin attempt until halfway through the match, you know? I really enjoyed that because usually in a match, like within the first minute, there's a pin attempt. And I'm like, really? But this one, they went at it and just danced around and just did their thing and beat the shit out of each other.
It was
just amazing. You know?
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I it wasn't one of my favorite Undertaker matches. It wasn't one of my favorite Brock Lesnar matches either. But I think that the what made the match so great was the result. And so I actually, as I was watching it, I didn't love it. I didn't think their styles were entirely compatible because like Tom said, it was hard for me, you know, the Undertaker and to his credit, like, I don't think that they didn't have him try to just match Brock Lesnar blow for blow in the match. He was on the defensive throughout, but it was hard for me to get behind the idea that that the Undertaker could hang in that fight. But just as they were kind of losing me, Brock killed him. So
yeah,
you know, and I think the I totally agree with Tom that I think the streak had become ending. The streak was really too big for the kind of, for sort of, Like, had Orton broken it at WrestleMania 21, that would have worked. You know, that would have worked. But it wasn't as big a deal then as it is now.
Yeah.
And I think that this match was really about the Undertaker having some finality to his career. Whether it might not be his last match, but I think that, you know, the way that his streak ended was unexpected, and, you know, we were on this podcast before WrestleMania saying that there was no way he was going to lose.
Yeah.
And it was unexpected. It wasn't built up as his last match. Brock Lesnar, in the entire lead up to the match, wasn't really billed as the threat that other guys have been billed as, at least on screen. And, you know, had The Undertaker won, and had The Undertaker retired undefeated at WrestleMania, there would always be this lingering sense of, oh, well, we could always bring The Undertaker back, or, oh, well, we'd always have the streak, or... And to make the bold decision to end it right there, you know, to someone very credible, but, you know, to not a full-time guy, so you may not be able to... You may or may not be able to leverage it into more down the road. To make that move was really, like... It felt very much like the end of my childhood, but it was a really powerful moment in entertainment.
Yeah, and I was surprised by, at the end of the match, most of the audience was booing Brock Lesnar, and I was like, I would have just stood up and just clapped for both of them, because it was, like, pretty awesome.
Well, after the 1-2-3, you could hear a pin drop, you know? And then, of course, they're going to boo Brock Lesnar. They're emotional. They're upset. They did not want their hero to lose. And you know what? I was upset. I booed Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, it was a hell of a match, and I can't wait to see where it goes. But, man, I was shocked, just like they showed the whole audience. But we'll move on to the next one I want to talk about, which is the first annual Andre the Giant Royal Rumble, with 30 people in the ring. One left standing gets the 4-foot trophy of Andre the Giant, which was hilarious. I did not predict Cesaro to actually win that, but it was pretty badass that he did. I mean, he totally did the whole Hulk Hogan by suplexing Big Show. So what do y'all think? You're all happy for Cesaro?
You are all lucky that you're 200 or more miles away from me, because I'd be swinging you all around the room right now.
I actually didn't have a favorite in that match. I didn't want to pick a favorite, because I just wanted to not be upset for whoever the winner was. You know, now if it had been somebody like The Miz, yeah, I probably would have been upset.
Oh, but no, I love The Miz.
I don't. But, I mean, it was just a fun match. I mean, if you go back and rewatch it, watching Rey Mysterio is freaking hilarious throughout the match. I mean, he's funny, you know? Most of it, he just kind of sat in a corner and kind of hid until the very end. And then when he was confronted by the Big Show, it was like, and I'm like, you know what? I couldn't hit the little guy either. I'm just...
But it shows that WWE has a really big invested interest in Cesaro, because he had basically two matches that night.
Oh, yeah.
So this is kind of, I think, a stepping stone to further his career into something much bigger.
And I think they're finally getting smart and looking at that global audience that they've kind of, not like ignored in the past, but, you know, they've done their obligatory European tours, and they'll go to Japan, they'll go to China. But much like the movie industry is really kind of shifting its focus away from America and onto the global market for box office revenues, and really pushing, you know, the European and the Asian markets in terms of, we want your money too. They are, you know, now you've got John Cena, who revealed on Steve Austin's podcast that he is dedicating, I think, like 4 hours every week to learning Mandarin Chinese, so that when he goes to China, he can actually do press events in the native language and really build up the WWE's reputation in that country. and they're grooming a guy who can speak German, who can speak Swiss, who can speak French, who can speak Spanish and English. So when he goes to Europe and he becomes WWE champion, which he will probably by the end of this year or early next year, you have a guy who, when he's in a different country, he can go to press events, he can go in front of people and speak their language and talk about why WWE is a global product and is such a powerful force in the marketplace and a great thing for, you know, for your kids to watch. And he's going to do that in German. And all the German kids are going to want to be Cesaro. And all the Swiss kids are going to want to be Cesaro. And they are being really intelligent about how they're marketing their future stars that way.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's pretty awesome. I think that the Battle Royal itself was a really good vehicle to show off what a total badass he is.
Yep.
And it was great. You know, I think that, you know, in a way that they couldn't have done it had he just cleaned house during the Fatal 4-Way and then, you know, lost to the Usos. I think that this was a really good vehicle to launch him, because he already, you know, they already knew what they had, in the sense that they spent, you know, his 2014 so far has been incredible. But now he's just headed to, you know, a great spot. I think the question is just, I would imagine that with Paul Heyman and just with the kind of how invulnerable Cesaro is, I would imagine he'd be a heel, but he's almost too popular right now for a SummerSlam or Survivor Series feud with Daniel Bryan for the title. So I'm just interested to see where he goes next, because I think he's got a ton of options, and they'll figure it out.
They'd be stupid to keep him a heel. I mean, his whole promo on Monday Night Raw was the promo of a face. I mean, granted, Paul Heyman is obviously a heel manager, but at the same time, for a while, he represented both CM Punk, who was a massive face, and a Brock Lesnar, who was a massive heel, and there was no problem with the audience not understanding that the same person can be on the sides of two different people, because Paul Heyman can play anything. Like Mike said, he's pretty much the best mic talker maybe in the history of the WWE. He can get people to do whatever he wants, face or heel. And he's a much better mouthpiece than Zeb.
Oh my gosh.
Certainly a star guy. So
I'm really excited for that matchup, that pairing of Paul Heyman and Cesaro, because I love watching Cesaro in the ring, and he, like you said, he's popular. I mean, people were cheering for him, not Jack, you know?
Oh, yeah. Nobody cheered for Jack Swagg. although even he had a nice couple moments in the Fatal 4-Way.
Yeah, I mean,
he is terrible, and I hate him.
Yes. He just looks...
It's interesting to see how they'll bring that back and incorporate this thing year round. I thought the trophy looked ridiculous, but I guess it is what it is.
It was such a wrestling. It was a WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I definitely look forward to it. It's cool to see everybody in the ring, and I'm glad Cesaro won. Moving on to another match, I want to talk about the Diva match and how impressed I was by all those divas in there really getting to it, even though it ended, I thought, poorly, but I guess they fixed that on Monday, sort of.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like the way they ended it on Monday, but the diva match, I was impressed with the ladies. There wasn't much in the way of cat fighting.
Yeah, they actually did moves, which is good. That's what brings me back to the days of...
A 14-person match cannot possibly end in a submission. None of them could have just gotten in there and tackled somebody.
They could have. I really would have liked to see Tamina win. I thought that would have been great. An amazing turn. And I like, you know, the big, stronger girls anyway, so.
It was It was good. It was good. I mean, I'm glad to see them. It brought me back to, like, the Trish Stratus days and the, like, Jackie days and stuff like that. So I was glad to see in Lita days. I was glad to see actual moves and whatnot. But I thought it ended poorly, but it was cool to see all that happen. Tom, do you have anything to add on to the Diva match?
The submission finish was odd, obviously, because you're right. Like, with 1,300 Divas in the match, unless they were all, like, you know, being catty to each other about their outfits on the outside, someone should have come in there and broken it up. But I did love how AJ basically grabbed Naomi's hand and made her tap out, and that was the way the ref, like, called it, was because she was actually tapping her, like,
yes.
Like,
yeah, she was tapping her.
That was a great little addition to AJ's character, and obviously, like, that match ended the way it's supposed to, because you could never, ever, 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 ever gang up on anybody, even the heel, by that much, and expect that the heel's not going to win the match. Plus,
right.
It makes AJ look like a hoss for you know, basically, quote-unquote, defeating 13 other people, even though she really just avoided being in the match for a while and took out one person. But it makes her look like a hoss for surviving it, and then to drop it to a brand new talent the next night makes that talent already look like a rock star to everybody's eyes. I mean, we can't ever accuse the WWE, at least in 2014 so far, of not building new talent well. They're giving everybody they have brought up the most chance possible to be successful and over as they can.
Yeah, and I think it was great that we saw, you know, AJ has been... She has been a good character more often than not over the past couple years, but she's had nothing to do for months. And that was a really nice way for her to salvage her character. And then, you know, and she is the perfect foil for Paige for the next... You know, hopefully the next couple months. I mean, I think that she is the... It doesn't make sense for Paige to be going back and forth with the cast of Total Divas. Like, Paige is a wrestler.
Nope.
And
AJ's a wrestler.
Yeah.
They're flip sides of the same coin almost, to a certain extent. And, no, it's going to be a great program. And sure, like, you know, if Naomi gets involved, or obviously if we've all seen how good Paige and Emma are together... if they break Emma off of Santino and make her an actual character and not stupid wrestler's girlfriend like they typically do with a bunch of new people, you've got a couple of great, great, great Divas title feuds that people are actually going to want to see. Because once they really get in there, or once Paige gets in the ring and really does a full, you know, 5, 10, 15 minute match with someone, especially AJ, people are going to turn their ideas around of what a Divas match is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
It'll
very exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Now let's move on and talk about the Bray Wyatt John Cena match. John, it just feels like the WWE do not know what to do with John Cena, because people boo him. More people boo him than cheer him, and they tried to go with the angle like unleash his heel with Bray Wyatt, and he wouldn't do it, and he ended up winning the match. Although I would like to see Bray Wyatt have won, but. It was a solid match still, because Bray Wyatt really carried that, just because John Cena does the same exact thing every week in and out, you know, for the last 7 years.
I think Tom might be with me on this one, but I like John Cena.
I'm one of the biggest John Cena marks you'll ever come across. I love him to death.
Yeah, so I think that because his character is so... consistent, and that it's so kind of, he's so rigid in his sort of creed, right? And that I get why people boo him.
Because nobody's that nice.
No, I mean, I just
unattainable in a sense. Like, you can't be John Cena in a sense. Like, I think that there's something in that, but like it really doesn't. I feel like when people say they want him to turn heel, like, what you really want him to do is, you think he's a heel now, and you want him to turn, like, as soon as he turns heel, you're just going to cheer him.
You're going to cheer him, right.
And so then, and then all the kids who cheer him because he's phenomenal and he does the right thing every time are going to be crushed, and they're going to boo him, and you're going to be back in the same place, and you're going to be like, oh, everybody hates Cena. And so I don't really understand people's beef with the guy when all he does is have really, really good matches with pretty much everybody except Randy Orton.
I agree. So I like...
Like, they're both good, and they don't work.
No, I agree. So I'm not saying I don't like John Cena. I do like him. I'm just ready for something new. I'm ready for some like a different character. Even if he went back to doing his freestyling raps, that was great. And if, when you brought up the Randy Orton, John Cena thing, I recently went to a house show in Dallas and saw a steel cage match with Cena and Orton. And, I mean, it was good because it was a steel cage match, but they're kind of doing the same thing. But Bray Wyatt's character and his family is just so good right now, and I want to see them.
I love the John Cena Bray Wyatt match because, yeah, you're right. The John Cena we know and have been exposed to is he is such a good guy, and he does all these wonderful charitable things. And Bray Wyatt, he wanted to turn John Cena into what he thought John Cena really was, instead of this fake, good, goody-two-shoes guy who does things just to be liked. And I just adored the story that those two told, Cena's struggle, and then when he finally didn't do the bad thing and won it legit, you know?
Yeah.
That... I loved the story of that match because Bray Wyatt. They were doing so much to turn him and piss him off, you know. And at the end of it, you could see he was tempted. He was gonna do it, and then no, he didn't. I loved that match.
It was a good match, and I thought I like I said, I like Cena. I feel like I wanted Bray to win, and I wanted them to carry their feud further. Or, yeah, I mean, my secret, you know, wish is like John Cena would be an honorary family member of the Wyatt family.
You know, I really honestly hope that Bray Wyatt would win, and not only would he win, he would turn John Cena the next night on Raw. John Cena would be the next member of the Wyatt family. That would have been...
And Cena would grow a beard. It'd be awesome.
That would be great, too.
So you're willing to just throw the WWE's future away for that moment where Cena has a beard.
Also, I'm not convinced that John Cena can grow a beard, but...
the guy's like hairless.
Go ahead.
No, I just said... Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that during Bray Wyatt's entrance on Sunday, I was like giddy. I was giggling to myself
and
clapping along and was just so pleased.
He was being played to the ring by a bunch of ghouls with guitars, which is the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, it was like True Detective all over again. It was just so good.
And they had the, I feel like those masks were in Beetlejuice, right?
Oh, like the long nose ones. Yeah, totally.
So I only have two things to add to this discussion about the John Cena Bray Wyatt match. Number one, there was no way Bray Wyatt should have won that match, because if he did, he would have pinfall victories over the most popular wrestler in the last 10 years and the current WWE World Heavyweight Champion in the last 3 months. Which, where do you go from there for that character? If he can beat Daniel Bryan and beat John Cena and do it both cleanly, where does that character go? He's already the most powerful person that there possibly could be in the WWE, and he doesn't need to be there yet. He needs to still get beat by John Cena because he's still a bad guy, and he still needs to be proven wrong that maybe John Cena, while maybe one day he will crack, he hasn't yet because he's just too strong and too powerful and too good. And the second piece is people aren't actually booing John Cena. They're booing the system. Because he always gets championship matches, and he always does kind of the same stuff, and he always kind of has the same character. But they know that that's not really him. That's the booking decision to to portray him that way, because when John Cena has those matches against, like, Cesaro and Punk, people are behind him because he's legitimately amazing. He's an amazing professional wrestler. Yeah. And if they tweak his character slightly, still make him a good guy, still make him the guy that always fights for hustle, loyalty, and respect, and fights for the guys that believe in him, but at the same time has this, you know, I'm coming up on 40, and all of a sudden I'm not fighting the people I've been fighting for the same 10 years over and over again. I'm fighting young talent that are faster than me, that are stronger than me, that have, you know, different ways of thinking, and he has to turn his character into kind of what he did in that Cesaro match and kind of be that, like, that angry old Japanese wrestler who just lariats you to shit every time he gets pissed off. That's fine. Like, let him be that kind of loosey-goosey good guy who has to really step up his aggression game to take out these pretenders that think they can be the next John Cena, because as much as he is a good guy, as much as he is, you know, I'm always here for Make-A-Wish, and I'm always here for my fans, he still has to hang on to that top spot. And if someone comes along that's threatening to take it from him, he's not just going to give it up. He's not going to be like, well, you know, it's your time, you deserve it. No, he's going to lariat them in the face so they never get his money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted Bray to win was, well, I like bad guys for the most part anyway, so I usually want the bad guy to win anyway. Yeah, and two, the way that the crowd started singing for Bray, it was hilarious, and I thought it just would have been cool. So
yeah, it was yeah. Awesome. Now let's move on to our the big event. We all pretty much love Daniel Bryan here. We have talked about Daniel Bryan.
Hold on. We can't get to the main event until we talk about the baddest motherfuckers on the planet taking out three old dudes in 30 seconds.
The Shield.
Oh, the Shield. That match was... That match was started and finished before, like, I blinked my eyes. It was hilarious. I'm like, what is Billy Gunn doing? You know, like, what is he doing?
I was looking forward to that match all night because, you know, my man Triple H lost. And I'm like, okay, well, at least Roman Reigns is going to give me a good show. And it was a good show, but it was really short.
It was amazing. It's almost perfect. And to me, the theme of this year's WrestleMania was burning the past and making way for the future. Undertaker is no longer has a streak. Triple H got beat clean basically twice by the same, you know, bearded vegan. They destroyed everything that everyone remembers about the Attitude Era, you know, Kane being the fiery demon and the New Age Outlaws and their, you know, punk demeanor, and, you know, they even cut off their thing. Like, they're about to give a promo and do their, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls stuff. And before they even got to that, the Shield was like, no, fuck you. We're going to come and destroy you, because why would anyone care what you had to say?
Yeah, but maybe their match was so short because the following night on Monday, they, you know, it looked like it's going to go somewhere with them, you know, somewhere different.
I'm saying that was the only point. The Shield just made themselves into, I mean, not that they weren't already, but, like, big, huge megastars. But again, I think the entire point of WrestleMania 30 was basically resetting the WWE universe. And this is a company who, for years and years and years and years, would, you know, troll out their old guys and gave them a WrestleMania match, and they have a victory over the new guy because they, you know, they get their one less, you know, their one last shot in the spotlight. And they have basically said in 2014, do you like the Attitude Era? Go fuck yourself.
Yep.
That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're saying, those guys don't exist anymore. The New Age Outlaws are old, and they should get their ass kicked in 30 seconds by a bunch of 20-something hosses. They should get destroyed. They shouldn't get any offense in. They shouldn't even possibly win any match or be able to hit a finisher. They should get speared to death and triple powerbombed to the center of the earth.
Yeah, I can't argue. So now that the Shield is out of the way, let's talk about Daniel Bryan. Let's talk about how he won against Triple H. Let's talk about his match with Orton and what's his name?
Batista.
Batista, and then Batista, and then the interference with, you know, Triple H and Stephanie. Yeah. It's I literally thought for a second that Daniel Bryan might have really been injured, but I mean, of course he wasn't. When they, I'm so glad they did the Spanish announce table. So again, but yeah, I think Daniel really, you know, earned it that night, and he's, I mean, they definitely listened to the fans, and he's champion now. What do y'all think?
It's the best. It's the best possible timeline, and what makes it even better is that Triple H, who is a character and a wrestler who I have not liked in a decade, because he's kind of been slow ever since he had his quadricep injury, and he's obviously always had the backstage aura of I bury all the people you like. He worked his goddamn ass off in that opening match. He was throwing tiger suplexes and clotheslining people's necks off of their bodies. Like, he was doing the best match he may have performed since he had a quadriceps injury.
It was like watching old Triple H.
And it was amazing. And he did it to completely put over a younger, newer, fresher wrestler. Like, he did it to, yeah, show the world that he still had it in him, that he was still a quote-unquote technical wrestler, that you can throw him in with Daniel Bryan, and he can match him move for move because he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. And he did amazing, and he made that story even better because he was busted his ass so much.
Yeah, he busted his ass, and it made Daniel Bryan look like a freaking rock star.
Yeah.
And it was, again, it was like watching old Triple H, the best that I can say, and one of the reasons why Triple H was my favorite, even when he was the worst he could ever be, he was still my number one guy, was because of how he worked in the ring. And, you know, the past few years when I've seen him in the ring, he just looked, like you said, old and tired. And it's like, when that match with Daniel Bryan, it's like, wow, there's the guy that was my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that it was... Sometimes predictable is good, and this was one of those times. Like, the storyline started at SummerSlam and carried all the way to WrestleMania, and it was the perfect resolution to that story. And for Daniel Bryan to go through all of the members of Evolution who aren't collecting Social Security in one night was a really incredible feat. And they made it, you know, like, by the end of it, he had taken a really, really severe beating, which makes a lot of sense because that's what should have happened. And for him to come out of it with the title, you know, he's not invincible by any means. But he is the champion. Like, I was having this conversation with someone who's not as much of a Daniel Bryan fan as we are. And I said, the thing about Daniel Bryan is that he doesn't beat people up. He wins wrestling matches. And he's such a great performer. And to have him get that moment at WrestleMania after all the work he's put in this year, it was great. It was a really happy ending to a show that was awesome pretty much start to finish.
And let's talk about how Daniel, or not Daniel, but we talked about CM Punk last time, and this is kind of what he wanted, right? This is where he wanted the direction of the WWE to go. Do you think he should have, like, stayed on a little bit longer rather than leaving?
So I think, like, when Shawn Michaels left in 98,
yeah,
he left and the Attitude Era happened.
Okay.
And I think that there's something to be said, and I don't have any, like, this is total just outsider, like, you know, I'm totally guessing. But I feel like there's something to be said for somebody who's really talented but really unhappy. And when that person goes away, it not not only opens up that person's spot for other people, but it also kind of removes a dark cloud over everybody. And I feel like, you know, and maybe it's all an FU from Triple H to CM Punk, like, oh, this is what you wanted. Look at how awesome a match with me could be at WrestleMania. I don't know. But I do know that the product just seems so much more energetic week to week, and especially at WrestleMania, than it was the last few months with CM Punk. And, you know, a small part of me will always want Punk to charge out of the crowd and GTS Daniel Bryan and start that feud up. But for the most part, I think that, you know, there would have been a place for CM Punk on the card, and he could have done a great job in the right frame of mind. But in the state of the world in 2014, I think we saw the best WrestleMania we could have saw.
I agree.
The CM Punk leaving thing, I should have an article about this hopefully in the next couple of days. It depends on when the website actually gets back on the web. But the CM Punk leaving thing, we would not have had the WrestleMania 30 that we got if he were still around. CM Punk leaving was pretty much like the really hot ex-girlfriend who dumps you for someone else, and you go through that whole phase where you start working out a lot and you make yourself look as good as you can because fuck them, I'm so good now and I don't need her anyway. But really you're doing it because you want to get her back and you want you to look like the guy that she's dating now. That's exactly what's happening, is the WWE was like, well, fuck CM Punk. Look at how fucking great we are. We didn't need him. We're the best wrestling company in the world. And they turned into the greatest wrestling company in the world, but that whole purpose was to be like, so, CM Punk, when you want to come back, we're pretty fucking awesome now, aren't we? Like, that's exactly what's happening. And if he had stayed on, Taker probably would have kept his streak. The New Age Outlaws possibly could have pinned the Shield because they would have broken up in something else. Daniel Bryan probably would not have even had a title match. He would have had Triple H alone. But all of these things are falling into place because their hot girlfriend said, you're not good enough for me anymore. And they're like, yeah, I am. I'll prove it.
No, it's an interesting thing. And like I said, Bryan did a really good job. And I really thought Batista did a great job too. And Orton through the whole thing, you know, just really selling Bryan, that was the whole point, and they did a great job. And I think
Randy Orton, when you think about where he was at WrestleMania 29 and where he is now, I think he had a really good year. I think he's a lot more interesting now than he was before. I'm really excited to see what happens with this new Authority Evolution Alliance.
Yeah, let's talk about that on Raw. Moving to Raw, a lot of stuff happened from Raw that kind of changed the game, such as this new thing that you're talking about, right?
Looking
forward to the match that's Daniel Bryan and the Shield versus Triple H and Batista and, you know, the others. That one will be a fun match because you know it's going to happen. It's 4-on-4.
Well, since they announced a new pay per view, and it seems like it's a hardcore pay per view.
Yeah, Extreme Rules
is next, right?
Yeah.
Extreme Rules, and honestly, except for this year, which I'm not sure how anything can top WrestleMania 30. The last 2 years, Extreme Rules has been a better pay per view than the WrestleManias before it.
Yeah,
and so they've got Kane's the fourth guy on the Authority side, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Those eight could just go to war.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that that Orton and Batista seamlessly got on the same page on Monday night. And I like to think that there will be some greater understanding as we go forward of the power that Triple H holds over both of them. And I think that'll be a pretty exciting build for whatever they decide to do, if they decide to have one of those four guys challenge Bryan and the other three face the Shield, either way, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be great.
I think you're going to see, quote-unquote, Evolution versus the Shield at Extreme Rules, and I'm not sure who Bryan will be defending against. I'm not sure if they know who he'll be defending against, or, you know, maybe he'll do double duty. You know, maybe he'll defend against Orton, and then Orton also goes on to be in the main event. Who knows? But I really do think we're going to see the three, you know, non-Social Security members of Evolution versus the Shield at Extreme Rules. And again, it's not going to be the same kind of squash match that it was at WrestleMania, but I would fully expect, you know, shy of cheating on the heels part, which will probably happen, that the Shield will take them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Shield on main event Tuesday night, the Shield beat the Wyatts pretty convincingly.
Yeah, it was.
I need to watch that match still. I really need to see it.
They went out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm. They're clearly building the Shield. They've been building the Shield for a year and a half now, but
they're really giving them a push.
Yeah, I mean, they're really the focal point of the show with Daniel Bryan, and it's really exciting. I think that, and then this is probably the next thing to touch on, is that this mini NXT invasion is also really promising.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I think it's a good direction they've got going with that as well, and that'll probably play a thing in the next pay-per-view. Do you think, since we all saw what RVD, he's back. Do you think he's going to have, like, since he's like sort of, he was in ECW and all that stuff, and this next pay-per-view is going to be sort of like that, maybe? Do you think he's going to have a prominent role in WWE now?
No, I don't think he ever will, because he only has that 3 or 4 month at a time contract.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever see him. And
not unless they brought back Hardcore.
I don't think the crowd will ever really invest in RVD again. He's essentially the same guy he was 10 years ago.
And that's
the WCW invasion.
That's what boggles my mind, is that people dislike John Cena because he's, quote-unquote, been the same character for 10 years. And, I mean, he kind of has been the same character for 10 years, but he does have matches where he does things you don't expect, like he Hurricanrana CM Punk, and he clotheslines from El Cesaro, and he does all these things that are like, hold on, I have legit wrestling ability, let me pull something out and really shock you about it. RVD has actually legitimately been wrestling the same match for a decade. He has not changed his moveset. He has not changed his selling. He has not changed his psychology. He has wrestled the same match for 10 years, and people still flip out for him, and I don't understand why.
I don't either. He's like a stripper with sad eyes.
I'm going to be able to look at him the same again. Thank you.
Do you think we'll hear from Tommy Dreamer at all?
I'm out on ECW originals. Like, they just make me feel bad.
I mean, you know, again, you know, your RVD, Tommy Dreamer, you know, if they brought back the hardcore title, the hardcore division, then, yeah, I could see those guys coming back and having that niche. And
so, I mean, they're mid-40s now, almost all of them. There's just no place
for this. I mean, I love RVD. He's fun to watch, but like they said, he's still doing the same stuff that he did when he first debuted, you know? Yes.
And
that hardcore division would have to be, you know, chair shot to the head free and I think the direction that the product is going is, you know, instead of giving time to guys like that, it's giving time to guys like, you know, like Bo Dallas will start to get time. We're going to start to see, you know, I think Dolph Ziggler will continue to get some time. I think guys who can wrestle will be the sort of filler rather than the hardcore stuff or like the pure comedy stuff.
And I read an article a few months ago that they were thinking of bringing Kurt Angle back for something for WWE. Do you think that he would be a good, that would be a good decision?
Yes.
I would hope so. I mean, I think you could add a lot to it now, like even being like a heel to Brian, that would be awesome.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think I don't watch TNA much, if at all. And I know that Kurt Angle is a lot older. And you know, he certainly had a lot of physical problems and, you know, I'm not expecting him to be 2005 Kurt Angle, but he's still, you know, he's still the best probably pure athlete that wrestling's ever had. He'd be a phenomenal addition, and it would be so, there are so many matchups that I would like to see. You know, I think that a face Kurt Angle against Bray Wyatt would be phenomenal. I think a heel Kurt Angle against Daniel Bryan would be phenomenal. I think Angle Cesaro would make Tom's head explode.
Which one?
You know what? That's delving into TMI.
Both at the same time.
Okay, I might want to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, Kurt Angle also needs to come back because he needs to end his career in WWE. He does not deserve to retire from a, you know, very clearly second-rate wrestling company. Even if he only, again, like, you know, Brock Lesnar comes in, WrestleMania, wrestles SummerSlam, you know, shows up with a Rumble and a couple Raws in between and just kind of does that kind of contract, which is probably what they'll keep him on, so he doesn't kill himself because he, you know, he kind of has the same kind of conditions as, like, an Ultimate Warrior does, where he's had some drug problems. He is so convinced that he can do anything that he will put his health on the line to do them, and WWE has to stop him from doing that. But he needs to come back and retire with WWE. We finally need to get a 3-disc Blu-ray of Kurt Angle matches. We've never gotten one from them. Like, that needs to happen because he's only had amazing matches in his career. Okay. It just makes sense, and I firmly believe it will that it will happen. I think it will, and it should happen.
I agree. So to wrap this podcast episode up, I'll ask you each the same question. I'll start with Tom. What is one match, as of things stand right now, present, what's the one match you want to see at the next pay-per-view?
Well, I think, since we talked about the Hardcore Championship and ECW Originals, that there is a huge missed opportunity for the WWE to have a new tag team champions. And, of course, I'm talking about Sabu Tista.
Ooh. Jesus.
Honestly, the one match that I would... With the way the WWE is currently positioning itself, which is, you know, kind of all new guys all the time. Let's see. I mean, honestly, I would love to see Daniel Bryan mix it up, probably hopefully later in the year. I really want to see a straight up, you know, legit Daniel Bryan versus Seth Rollins match where they're both, you know, fighting for the title, or they're both separate from their tag teams. Because every time it's happened before, you know, Seth Rollins has just been the guy from the Shield. And when that happened, the Shield was the heel guys. They all didn't have their personas perfectly in tune as they do now. And while I hope they keep the Shield together as a dominant face team for at least the next 3 to 4 to 6 months. I'm really, really, really hoping in the future we get to see that kind of match with the kind of energy they built behind the Shield. Because Seth Rollins, I think, is, even though Roman Reigns is the quote-unquote standout because of image and looks and just he's a great sports entertainer, Seth Rollins is, to me, a clear standout of a massive face champion. And if they put him against Daniel Bryan and let them go nuts for 30 minutes, it's going to be awesome, especially after he has that face heat of his own.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Mike, what's your, as where things stand right now, what's the one match you want to see at the next pay-per-view?
So, I'll cheat a little bit. I want to see Sheamus and Big E for the Intercontinental Championship, because all I want from that match is for Sheamus to win the Intercontinental title and then actually defend the Intercontinental title consistently. And so I think that with all these guys who are wrestlers in the more traditional sense of the word than we've had in a long time, that, and with there being no world title, I think that it's a perfect opportunity to rebuild the Intercontinental title. And I think that Sheamus, because he's such a good worker, would be the ideal guy to get it started. And I think that that could lead to Cesaro chasing the Intercontinental title over the summer rather than, you know, I think that Cesaro's going to need something to do with his time. And I think that that's what I'd really like to see between now and SummerSlam. So I'd like to see that get started at Extreme Rules.
And I would pay, well, granted, the WWE Network, make sure that I'm not really paying anymore, but I would pay to see a series of Sheamus Cesaro Haas fights, because that would be incredible.
That would be awesome. Angie, what about you? What's the one match you want to see?
Well, you know, I already kind of touched on it. The last Raw really set up a match I want to see, and I would love to see it at the next pay-per-view, but I'm probably going to see it before then, because, well, the WWE just can't help itself. But The Shield and Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, Randy Orton, Batista, and Kane. I would love to see that match.
That would be good. I think that would be good. Even though I'm not a huge Kane fan, I'd still like to see that, just because I want to see how that ends up.
I love a good bad guy, and even corporate Kane is, I've always loved Kane, it's just a thing, but a corporate Kane, he's a fun bad guy, and surprisingly, you know, he knows how to use a mic. You know, I didn't expect that.
And he's always been probably one of the best workers for a guy his size that ever had.
Oh, yeah.
And his age, I mean, he's as old as Batista, if not a little older by now, and I would still say that he can outwork that guy easily. He can go in the ring. Yeah, he's old and he's not quite as fast, and he probably won't
as he used to be, but he's still fun to watch in the ring. He can still get it done. And all eight of those guys, I would love to see in a match, because every single one of them know how to entertain in the ring, and they would just be an amazing match.
Yep. And as a bonus, every single one of those guys on the heel side deserve a running drop kick to the face from Daniel Bryan, if not 4 or 5.
Correct. And I think, and mine is, besides seeing Titus O'Neil in every match, I would like to see, you know, no holes barred match between Daniel Bryan, Brock Lesnar, Triple H, and Big Show. To believe it or not, I want a 4-way just all out brawl, last man standing.
I thought for a second you were going to say that you wanted to see a no holds barred match between Zeus and Rick.
No, I want to see that, because I've seen Big Show
you
in
can
some.
See that now on Blu-ray from WWE.
Yes, you can. So yeah, that's our WWE podcast. For the spot right after WrestleMania 30. I'm Brian Kluger. I'm with Tom Nix. I'm with Mike Pertil and Angie Sanders. And that is our amazing Multimedia Men podcast. Find us on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, We're all on there. And you can find Tom on the Smart Marks podcast. Good podcast. Give it a listen to.
Can we sign off by all screaming yes into the microphone?
Yes, let's do that. 3, 2, 1. Yes. 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 Yes.